This episode is brought to you by The Manor, a premier addiction treatment facility in the hills of Wisconsin's Kettle Moraine Forest. Their program offers a tailored approach to those struggling with addiction in a secluded setting with no more than 11 men and women. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love are struggling with addiction, call The Manor at 414-930-1930. That's 414-930-1930. You can learn more about The Manor by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting discoverthemanor.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are. Falling squares on
TV screen. Still falling in line. I'm Bryn Mawr Hefka, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. So this is episode 92 of the podcast. It features a woman named Bryn Mawr Hefka, who is a sex, love, and relationship coach. So I was excited to get her on here. This is something I've had in mind for a while, to get someone from this discipline to just talk about what it is that made them decide to do this kind of work. So I saw Bryn on an Instagram live with Amanda Kuda, who was on the show a while back. And so reached out to her. So here she is. Had a great conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Bryn Mawr Hefka.
Just the product of some bad seeds.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Super excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm excited about this. I'm really intrigued about what you do and curious about what made you decide to do it. So I can't wait to hear that. So why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Bryn, and I am a sex, love, and relationship coach, and didn't start off that way. There's quite a journey of how I got here myself, but they say that you teach what you yourself need to learn. And I was no exception to that. I got married at a very young age. Actually met my former partner at 20 years old. I was in college at the time and fell in love, graduated from school. I was an elementary school teacher. So yes, I used to teach small children. I now teach sex for a living. I've always had a passion for educating others. I loved being on stage, if you will, and having a way to make information accessible to everyone. So I loved the challenge of knowing there was something, even if it was being digested to an 8-year-old's mind, figuring out a way to make it accessible to all 30 of the children in my room. I just wasn't in the right seat of the bus, if you will. So
who's that? Jim Collins?
Yep. So I was really unhappy teaching at the time, met my partner, and we fell into a 10-year relationship where we did the dance of well, we've been together this long. We love each other. Everything on paper looks great. And let's do the next logical step, which is to get married, right? It's the American dream. You find your partner. We went into business together. I left my teaching job to help support him in his entrepreneurial endeavors. And somewhere along the way, it's hard to pinpoint when, things started to get messy and they started to feel more like living with a roommate, and nobody taught me how to be in a relationship. Nobody taught me what it looks like to deal with conflict in a healthy way. No one taught me what it looked like to ask for what my desires were, sexually or in life. And I lost myself really deeply in that relationship. The relationship became my purpose. And that was a very quick way to feel resentful and to lose myself. So it wasn't until about over a year ago, after a lot of self-development, healing, inner child work, and I can get into all of that, but that I really realized how lost I had become and how I hadn't heard my own voice in a very long time. And it was then I realized, almost like being hit by a Mack truck, that my purpose was to hear my intuition and to teach women how to do the same, and to help myself first build a life that turned me on, that I got excited for, not the other way around, where I was living a life for somebody else. And so, unfortunately for us, or fortunately, because we're in a really great place, our marriage did end. And what birthed from that was a greater confidence, self-love, and compassion for myself than I knew was even possible. And through that journey, it became very clear, I want to teach women how to do the same thing and to do it with ease and grace, and to be able to really know themselves and confident to go after what they want in and out of their relationships.
Wow, you covered a lot.
I
really like that you mention the part about our voice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a big part of my journey in life has been squelching that and then suffering as a result of it.
Yeah.
And then learning to tune into it more and more and more.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe that the more tuned in we are and the more we follow that, the more effective we are at whatever it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I referenced a Mack truck earlier, and it was one of my mentors who actually shared with me an example of your inner voice, your intuition speaks to you in three different ways. The first is a feather, where it's gentle and soft. It tickles your face. It's quiet. You have to almost look for it, right? Or else you might miss it. The second is a brick, where it gets a little bit more aggressive and it's much easier to notice, but we can still avoid the brick if we're distracting ourselves enough.
And then there's the Mack truck.
Yeah. And then there's no avoiding it. And you have to pay attention. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes the Mack truck. And for me, in my marriage, it was getting to that point for me to wake up and hear. And now I get to listen for the feather. And I've trained myself and I help teach women to tap into that part of themselves, so that we don't have to wait for things to become so monumental before we pay attention.
Well, and I feel like on a societal level, we have the Mack truck right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I mean, things are just so bizarre.
So crazy.
But you know, it's this is something, intuition, that is important to me, and you know, a part of my, you know, spiritual identity, I guess, and a goal of my spiritual practice and spiritual life is to further develop that. And it's just like this hidden secret weapon we all have.
Yeah, superpower.
Oh, it is. It's so,
it really is.
And, you know, the way that it's been coming up for me recently, the way that I've been noticing it is not yet.
Like, ooh,
whatever it is, you know, it's I don't even hear the words or anything like that, but it's a knowing that, okay, maybe I want to do this. This could be okay, but I would be forcing it right now.
Yeah, that's
right now. So I need to just wait.
I love that you shared that, because it's something I've been fine tuning as well, is the, if there isn't a clear pull and a hell yes, and over time you get to really understand what an embodied full yes feels like. So I had someone teach me once to start practicing with smaller everyday life decisions. And part of what I had to do was practice this on my own after I left my marriage, because I was so used to having someone else show up for me and decide things for me. I was in a very codependent place. And so when I left and I broke that codependency, I had to take baby steps into what is it like to understand my yes and my no, and to speak from that place. And some days it was as simple as, like, what kind of coffee am I going to order today? What outfit am I putting on? And it sounds silly, but it, to me, those were huge steps when I had gone from not even 10 years, when I backtrack, because if I wasn't only looking at my marriage in a codependent way, before that I was with my parents. And so there was always somebody holding my hand and showing me the way. So this was truly the first time that I got to listen to the yes and the no. And one of the things that I've realized is, if it isn't a clear yes, then it's a no. Right. And that means the no is means waiting. Right. And it doesn't mean that it won't shift, but being uncomfortable with the, I'm sorry, being comfortable with the unknown, the period of the waiting. And that doesn't always feel comfortable, I guess is what I was trying to say, is that we like instant gratification.
Yeah. And, you know, especially like for me, as it relates to accomplishments or goals or whatever, I mean, we can do such a number on ourselves with negative self-talk that, or I have in my life. And one of the ways it's come up for me, and that's helped me develop this, is that, you know, I've always kind of known there was a book that I was going to write or something, you know? And for years and years, I would beat myself up for not having done it yet. And it just took me a long time to realize that I hadn't done it yet, because I wasn't who I needed to be to write the book I needed to write. And so the lesson I learned was, you know, it's okay. Like, it's it's gonna, I don't have to question myself. I don't have to beat myself up. I can just relax and trust that when the timing is right, I will know.
So true. And the stillness is where the magic happens for me, in letting go of the societal pressure to charge and move forward and to, like you said, always be accomplishing the next thing. I recently just booked a 3-week solo vacation for myself, which is something I would have never had the previous confidence to do. But there was so much power in the quiet. I could hear my voice again. So I made a promise to myself that anytime I feel as if I won't and can't hear my voice, that this practice of solo retreat really works for me. And I invite anybody that's struggling with the, but I haven't heard that voice, then it doesn't have to be a 3-week retreat. Give yourself a day where you do nothing. And actually reframing that you're not doing nothing, you're taking care of yourself and you're allowing yourself to be in a place that will allow your voice to come through. And that's not doing nothing. That's doing a lot.
Well, and you know, it, I thought about this when you were mentioning that it took you a while to tune into your voice after your marriage, that there's, you know, we live this indoctrination and it's, you know, it's like we have to detox from it. Like
yeah.
We need to learn to tune in and yes. unlearn all the BS.
Yeah. That's, I love the unlearning. Because if we can learn something, then we can unlearn it. And so much of my development came from first having the awareness of the patterns I developed in childhood. And once I was aware of what I inherited subconsciously, mostly right from mom and dad, I was able to start breaking that pattern. And so then I got to practice too, the self-compassion of, well, of course I chose my partner like this because that's what I saw. It's what I learned growing up. Yeah. So I learned that I needed to have a man to take care of me, and that's what equaled safety and love. And it wasn't until I got clear on those patterns that I could start to break them myself once and for all.
So can you talk a little bit about how you began to break the pattern? What did that, how'd that start? Was it individual therapy or?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say the first sign was just a deep sense of like dissatisfaction. I got to this place in my life where I kept asking, is this it? Is this really it? Is this all that I get to have? I got the husband, I got the house, I had the business, I had the 2 dogs, and I was just so dissatisfied. And so I knew there was something more for me. And I knew that it wasn't external. I knew that it was within me because I had all the external things, right? I had, like I said, all the objects I just checked off. So I started to get keen on, this isn't an external problem. This is an internal problem. And I started to see the same things coming up in my marriage, the same arguments, the same feelings of, I don't feel like he's hearing me. I don't feel connected. I don't feel as if we're on the same page moving towards a goal together. And so I started to see these pieces, but I didn't know how to fix them. So for me, my first step was finding, it wasn't therapy necessarily, but it was a transformational retreat. And I went to this retreat, and at this retreat, they had us go into, for the first time, limiting beliefs that I picked up from my parents. And I say this with nothing but the utmost love for them, because they were doing the best they could. And it doesn't matter whether or not they were doing the best they could. I inherited, like I said, some of those patterns of, you need a man to feel safe. You're not good enough unless you are a certain level of attractiveness and have a certain level of success in your life. And once I saw those patterns, then nothing logical happened. It was a body healing. It was this somatic level of letting myself actually grieve the things that I didn't have growing up, letting myself feel sadness, anger, whatever came up in relation to my upbringing, so that I could actually create space and program the patterns I actually wanted to have embedded in me, right? I didn't want to just go around blindly holding on to these things that my parents had given me. And they gave me some really great things to work from too. But there were some ones that were essentially allowing me to live life through that script. And so when I cried and grieved and did all of these things in my body, I was then able to feel more spacious so that I could start to program, okay, so if it doesn't mean that a man is my everything, what do I want to create? Right. And I essentially was able to give myself this blank canvas of, well, what actually matters to me? And that was the first really big pivotal moment in my own healing. And that retreat's actually called Training Camp for the Soul. If listeners are interested, it's a really great program.
I was going to ask you that because I've been through something similar, I think, probably. Training Camp for the Soul. I haven't done the whole thing yet, but there's something called gratitude training.
Yeah, sure. There's so many programs now that are that I've seen since being in that world, because what I did, this is very typical of my personality, is if I like something, I go all in on it. And so I finished that program and I said to the owner, I have to work for you. Yeah. I have to be a part of this world. I've never experienced anything like it, where I've seen such big transformation so quickly. Because in my experience, what I had seen was staying in the mind and trying to logic my way through things only got me so far. Mm-hmm. And I'm smart. I was able to logic my way through a lot of things, but there was still these same patterns that were keeping me feeling stuck. And so once she was able to teach me how to access my body and my feelings, everything shifted. Mm-hmm. And so I studied under her for another year until I felt comfortable to really spread my wings and fly so that I could start teaching women how to access their own emotions and understand their body at a deeper level so that they could experience more pleasure and just more confidence in their ability to navigate life.
Well, and you mentioned evaluating your beliefs, which is critical. You know, we don't recognize how these, and they're largely unconscious.
So much.
Mm-hmm. And they just drive everything. They do.
Yeah. Yep.
When I went through that process, the big thing that came up for me was basically nobody wants to hear what you have to say.
Mm.
And you know, I could like pick it apart and totally figure out how I ended up at that conclusion.
Right.
It totally made sense because, you know, I was just trying to make everybody around me happy because I needed their love and their favor and
of course
all that stuff. That's what we do. We adapt to survive our surroundings. And
of course.
But it also, you know, it took the power out of it to realize what it was.
Yeah.
And it also emboldened me to like grab the microphone and get up in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And speak my mind.
Now you have a podcast.
Well, and it's funny because I had this podcast like for the better part of a year before I did that. And it's so it's interesting that it's the same, you know, there's that connection, but
you were ready to shift that belief.
I was.
Yep.
So speaking of belief, this kind of ties into, you know, the whole sex thing. It's so, man, it's so heavy. A topic.
And
the belief part, I mean, there's such a taboo sort of element to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much repression around it and shame. And I mean, the beliefs that we have about it, that we like as a society just convey without even knowing it, like just think of it like I'm a good girl, like that. Like,
yeah.
Just that statement. Like,
that was one of mine.
I mean, and you know, liking sex doesn't make you bad. I mean, if you're human. And the other thing about it is, it's sacred, you know, it's like such a sacred sort of connection. And, you know, I'm a single guy, and one of the things I run into a lot, and I have five older sisters. So I think that has greatly affected the way I regard and treat women.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, you know, it's not uncommon at all for me to meet someone like, you know, first date, first conversation where like they're so on guard, you know, and so used to guys putting pressure on them. Like, I don't get it. Like, I made sense when I was 18, 20 years old.
Sure. Right. But
as an adult, like, why would I, you know, I don't want to have sex with somebody unless, like, she can't keep her hands off me. You know, like, isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
Yeah.
But, you know, when it's like, I mean, I've had occasions where I've said, listen, like, I'm, you know, we're having fun. I'm not gonna like, I'm not gonna be like that. Like, it's okay. Yeah. We can enjoy ourselves and make out or whatever, but I'm not gonna do that to you. It's all right.
There's so many layers to all of what you just said too, right? The limiting beliefs and the doing what feels good. Right and true for you right now as a, I'm not sure how old you are, but X-year-old man and where you're at in your development and journey. And like you said, when you bring somebody else into the mix and their patterns and their beliefs, it can get a little messy. But where I like to meet my clients at with is, what do you want to create? If we get rid of what society has taught you, right? Because where do most of us learn about sex? It's usually through porn or through just doing it, right? Like no one talks to us. Well, I'll say in my experience, nobody talked to me about sex in a way outside of it's between two people who love each other. And if you have sex too early, you could get pregnant and you should wait till marriage. But if you don't, then you wear a condom, right? And like, that was the extent of it. But there's a lot more to it than that, I think, as we know. And where I like to really support my clients is it starts with you. It starts with you knowing your body, your desires, and you taking ownership for your pleasure. Because where I've seen myself get stuck, and I know a lot of my clients have felt the same, is I liked to defer my body and my anatomy and my pleasure to my partner can figure this out. And if he can't figure this out, then I guess we're out of luck. And it wasn't until a couple of sexless years in a marriage and feeling super dissatisfied that I finally said, okay, enough is enough. I'm ready to take responsibility and to get educated about sex. And that was at 30 years old, right? And so it's really never too late. But for me, there is no such thing as rules or what is supposed to be right for you may be completely different from me, because there are people that I know that have sex on a first date and it works out really beautifully for them because they talk about it and there's consent and they like to put it on the table first. And that's what works for them in that conversation. And so I don't like to stick to any rules of, well, it has to be after this many dates and you have to know each other for this long. And it gets to be whatever you want it to be. And that's really how I like to approach life is create a life that turns you on and excites you. Mm. You write the rules, not anybody else. And the same goes for sex.
Yeah, it's interesting as we age, you know, it's like there really are no rules. Like, okay, so like I've already done the dating thing. I've already been married and divorced. It's like,
right.
We're adults. Like, we want to do this. Like, why would we not if we're both on board? Right.
Yes.
It's
absolutely.
It's so, man, life is so interesting.
It's so crazy and fun. And it's the human experience. It's the roller coaster, the ups and the downs, and figuring out how to do the dance with somebody else. It's a really special and wild ride.
So what is it about, what is it that attracted you? Cause there are a lot of like love coaches, life coaches. Mm-hmm. What is it about sexual experience that attracted you to like gravitate toward being that kind of coach?
Yeah, it's a great question. It was because sex was this thing that I knew was a big part of why my marriage didn't work. And it was something that I knew was a rabbit hole that I had yet to go down with infinite potential. And sex is one of the most natural, beautiful, expansive things we can experience as a human being. And I knew I had only scratched the surface. I like to joke that I had one crayon in my crayon box, and that was the only crayon that I knew how to color with for a very long time. Oh, and I'm only, you know, I would say a year and a half into my sexual development journey with very deep intentions and discovery. And I've added a lot of crayons, and there's still so many more. And it was one of those pieces for me that once I realized how much potential was there that goes way beyond just sex, it became a no-brainer for me that while it's not all that I do, this has to be a part of how I help women. Because we are meant to, our bodies are literally created to receive and feel pleasure. As a woman, the clitoris has 8,000 nerve endings and no other biological purpose other than to receive pleasure. And so it would really be a disservice if I wasn't teaching women how to access that part of themselves and how to do it in a way for themselves that, again, they are taking full responsibility so that when they add somebody else into the mix, it's just even more magical. But first and foremost, they know how to turn themselves on. And I love teaching about the idea that orgasm and orgasmic energy, it's an energy to create something to be birthed. So sex, yes, it creates babies when done in a specific time frame and way. And it can also be used to birth ideas, creation, abundance. And so tapping into this powerhouse, our sacral root, which stores our power, our foundation, it's the root of our being. And when we tap into that energy, what is possible and how powerful we can become and feel when we open that energy and we allow energy to move from our root through the rest of our body, it can be incredibly powerful to take ownership of that part of you, especially if, like we talked about earlier, there was shame there previously, or God forbid, there was trauma. Working through that so that we can take our power back and be able to live a life that is filled with pleasure. Because I certainly want my lens to be pleasure first. And I want the same for the women that I work with.
So, what is there a school of thought that influences your philosophy about this more than other things? Like, I mean, Tantra is the first thing that comes to mind. So where have you drawn on from this knowledge? We're
Yeah, that's a great question. I like to collect a lot of information. So I've studied Tantra, I've studied kink and BDSM, I've studied all different sorts of sexual connection. And I think what is my philosophy would be try a lot of things and find your flavor. Because for most of us, self included, I only knew one way to have sex. It was missionary, the same foreplay every time, and we ended the same way. We rolled over and it was done. And then every time I tried something new, like I took a Tantra class and I learned about breath work and eye gazing. Yeah. And okay, boom, that was a light bulb. And how so much more deeply I was able to connect with my partner. I mean, just
those two things are huge.
Huge, right? Like, yeah. Okay, if I stare into my partner's left eye for 5 minutes while we breathe and sync our heart rate and our breath before we have sex, how much more connection can I feel? How much more deeply can I open by doing one simple thing differently? And then when I studied BDSM and I learned about the power dynamics of the dom and the sub and learning about things like spanking and hair pulling, and it's like, okay, cool. I got one tool that I liked out of that. Now I get to take that back into my practice. So rather than the normal, you know, vanilla that we'd have, we get to add in some spanking in there, and that feels really fun. And so my philosophy is try a lot of things, learn a lot of things, and at the very minimum, you get to go back to vanilla at any time, and that's perfectly okay. That's why my mentor always said to me, that's why vanilla is on every menu in the world. You'll go anywhere and you'll always find vanilla because it's a great flavor.
Well, that's one of my things is that I actually like vanilla better than chocolate. You know, it's actually a really great flavor in and of itself. And it kind of, it's used as a synonym for boring, and it's really not.
Mm. You know? No, it's when you only have vanilla that it becomes boring. And that's where I like to encourage my clients to create time to explore. Even if it's once a month, and this is whether you're single or partnered, once a month, putting on the calendar what I like to call sexploration, which is a time where you set aside an hour to try something new. And you take orgasm off the table, so there's no pressure, there is no finish line, right? That's another one that's deeply rooted in a lot of my clients is, when the man finishes or your partner finishes, sex is done and successful. And it's like, okay, if we take orgasm off the table and we just allow ourselves to indulge in what feels good while trying something new. Because how many times, this is where sex gets to be really vulnerable and messy, but if you think of learning any other skill, how often are we great the first time we try something? Not usually, never. Right?
Yeah.
So why do we look at sex any differently?
And well, and then continue to do it that same way for our entire life.
Exactly.
Doesn't make sense.
No. So humans typically desire novelty and newness and experience. And that's where it comes back to one of my favorite phrases is pleasure is your birthright and it's also your responsibility. So it takes effort to have a great sex life. And a little bit of effort goes a long way. Doesn't mean you have to overhaul your entire sex life and start going to sex parties and swinging with other people. There's so many things possible. And it just takes doing a little bit of research so that you can start discovering what you like and how deep down the rabbit hole you want to go.
So I guess another thing I'd like to talk to you about.
Sure.
You mentioned how we learn about sex in the first place and porn. So, you know, I'm at an age where, you know, porn wasn't really how you learn about sex. I mean, I had like, I remember a kid in second grade, like, explained it to me. That's how I first learned about it, you know, which wasn't good. I mean, I'm not saying it was, mm-hmm. but back then, you know, porn was like the stash of magazines hidden away in some basement or mm-hmm. a handful of VHS tapes that teenagers watched before their mom came home from yep. work.
Yeah.
And just super taboo. And now, it's just, I mean, especially from the next generation after mine down, it's just so much more acceptable than it ever has been. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are on all that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to me, like, if it's, I don't know, I guess it's mm-hmm. like, anything else in terms of, because there is porn addiction, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But I guess the bottom line is if you're using it to avoid something,
mm-hmm.
then that's the problem.
Not, sure. You
know, but
absolutely.
What are your thoughts about all this and this? I mean, it's a pretty huge change in our culture, if you think about it.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so many layers to this. I'd say first and foremost, porn in itself can be a really incredible tool. And I personally don't want to demonize porn because it's a tool that I use. I love certain types of porn, and porn has been a really pivotal part of my own sexual development and journey. It's finding the right kinds of porn and using it in a way that feels good in your system. And just like you said, there's been typically with an addiction to porn, it's something that people feel shameful about. There's a shame associated there. So it stays hidden, and that reinforces the shame, which reinforces the addiction, and we need more of it. There's a hormonal release that happens. So we become addicted to it, and we need more and more of it to be able to orgasm. Mm. And so, if we can first and foremost let go of the shame, right, and understand that porn can be a really healthy and fun part of a sexual experience, that's a great place to start. And one thing that I like to advocate for is actually paying for porn, because when we support free sites where it may or may not have been created or filmed in an ethical way, there are porn directors and companies like Erica Lust who pay their actors and actresses really well. They're female empowered and well shot. They're actually enjoyable to watch, right? So we can really start to change our experience with porn. And then there's another type of porn that has been completely monumental in the way that I learned about my own body. His name is Kenneth Play, and he is an educational porn star. So he has found this magical combination of porn. So he's filming videos with himself and a partner, performing all different sorts of sex acts, but he's teaching you while he's doing these different techniques. So if you're wanting to learn more about anal sex and you don't want to just watch any full video on Pornhub because that doesn't feel good for you, Kenneth has a course where you can sign up and you learn about these different types of sexual acts in a way that's hot. And he jokes, you know, came here to learn, but stayed to masturbate, because the way he does his videos is so well done that you feel really turned on and also excited to try something new. And that's a very rare, I've never seen anybody else do it, combination to find. So I think it is really possible to start reworking your relationship with porn. Yeah. And it starts with just admitting to yourself first that there's a pattern here that doesn't feel good anymore. And what's the relationship that I'd like to build with this tool? And how do I want to use it going forward?
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the ethical part of it, because I don't know, that's a really important part of it to me. mm-hmm. you know, like the spiritual ramifications of it.
Yeah.
If someone is being victimized somehow, then, you know, I don't really want to contribute to that. And
of course,
it's like, you know, I've never really been a strip club guy, you know, I mean, generally speaking, I think historically in our culture, those women who do that kind of work aren't on a hot streak. I mean, things aren't typically going very well, and there's a lot of addiction and stuff like that. And, you know, I just never wanted to contribute to that, you know?
Sure. I think the piece that we keep touching on that I think is a centralized theme here is shame. Mm-hmm. And it's a question that I like to, you know, anytime there's shame attached to anything, that's where our shadow comes in. That's the part of us that we want to keep hidden. What would others think if they knew this about me? I wouldn't be loved. People would leave. And anytime we can bring the shadow to light, typically we find more connection, more acceptance, and more love, because we realize our shadow is something that actually connects us to other people, because they more than likely have experienced something similar. And that's a very common one that I work with my female clients is, when was the first time you felt pleasure in your body? And when was the first time you felt shame for that pleasure? And that question typically results in some big energy, because a lot of times it's the same instance. Right. So the first time they felt pleasure was also the first time they felt shame, because somebody caught them rubbing themselves up against a chair arm and they said, "What are you doing? That's disgusting. Just don't do that." Right. Or they were confused about what it was and nobody was there to talk to them, and they were told that it was wrong. Right. And so starting to identify and go back to that time can be a really powerful way to start understanding where the shame starts for you, so you can start to unpack and release it and really invite a life of pleasure that you desire to have.
All right. Here's a personal question. Being someone who does this for a living, what is it like, what is it like for your partner?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So at first it was, "Ooh, I'm dating a sex coach. This is so cool." Right. And that was really exciting.
Yeah.
And then the realness sets in, and our sex life is just like I imagine so many others, in that, there are times where we don't have sex. We go through periods where we don't have sex. And I would say the piece that keeps our sex life really strong is we talk about sex a lot. We have conversations that for some may feel uncomfortable, but we've normalized talking about sex, talking about our desires, debriefing, for lack of a better, sexier word, after sex, and sharing, like, "What did you like about that? This just happened the other day where we had sex and I felt a disconnect." And it led to a really beautiful conversation around his needs and my needs. And we came to a better understanding of each other, where if I hadn't felt brave enough to say, "Hey, during sex, I felt disconnected from you. What's going on?" That could have normalized that type of sex for us, and we could have kept having sex in a way that didn't feel good for either one of us. And so I'd say my one piece of advice for any couple looking to better their sex life is start talking about sex way more often. Talk about it like you talk about the weather, and get comfortable with the uncomfortable piece of talking about what worked and talking about what you'd like more of. And like any tough conversation, change doesn't typically happen after only one time. It can, and I invite that, right? I invite the speediness of fast transformation. And it typically takes multiple conversations and multiple tries and multiple you know, getting messy and weird and crying about it, right? There were tears shed in that conversation for me. I let myself be really vulnerable and be seen, and for my partner to feel the disconnect and how it felt in my body when I felt that way from him. So, I would say our sex life is super fun, but it's also real and it's vulnerable. And that's what makes it great.
Yeah, I just figured that would probably be an interesting sort of dynamic there to
totally
to be the partner of someone who does this for a living.
And what makes our connection special is, and this was a non-negotiable for me, is growth. We're both growth-minded people. We both are committed and open to trying new things. We both came from marriages where our sex lives were lacking. And so when we came together this time, we said, okay, this is what's important. We want to have novelty built in. We want to try new things together. And we want to prioritize sex, knowing that in the past it wasn't prioritized. And that led to disconnect. Sex is really the barometer a lot of times for the health of a relationship. And when sex isn't going well, there's typically signs of other things at play, because great sex requires great communication. And if communication is broken, then most likely the sex is going to be too.
Yeah. And then think about how bad we are at talking about this stuff. I mean,
yeah,
just recipe for disaster.
Right. Exactly. I like creating safe spaces for women to talk about sex. And at times it feels uncomfortable, but by the end of working together, my intention is for them to be able to speak confidently and clearly about their desires. Because when they can do that, the chances of them having them are way greater.
Well, and I don't know, just thinking of, there's got to be a market for like a weekend retreat for couples to,
purpose
being, we're going to come away from this being comfortable talking to each other about sex.
I'm going to tell my boyfriend after this that this is our next venture together. Yeah.
No, but
we joked about creating a retreat, because I use the Cran reference a lot, and we talked about creating a sex life where you can color again, right? All like using 64. All the colors. Yeah.
The big box.
Have sex in color.
That's great. Well, so you've changed. You've come a long way, right? I mean, this is huge. You must feel so much more alive than you did before.
Oh my gosh. I don't recognize my, I do and I don't. I recognize myself because this is who I've been all along. And if you had met me 2 years ago, it would have been a very different woman, with her light dimmed quite a bit more. So yeah. I'd like to think that my light is just turned all the way on now.
Well, and if you're anything like me sometimes, and I'm also like a growth minded, I just think it's what we're made to do, continue to evolve and improve and grow and broaden. You know, there are times when I'll react to something in a way that I never did before, and it just happens so naturally, and it can be something that I struggled with in the past, and it's just like, I can't even believe I'm...
Yeah.
This is happening right now. It's just so different. That I feel like a different human being in certain ways.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And something I've started to get really dialed in on is my language, and that the words that I use really help shape and create my reality. And so when I catch myself saying, I can't believe this happened, instead of framing it in the negative, I've shifted to, I can believe this. And really let that land in my system of, yeah, I can believe it because I did the work. And I know you did the work too, and that you're listeners are doing the work because they're listening to this podcast, right? They want to live a life of authenticity. And so they're showing up, and that means they get to have and create the life that they want and believe in themselves, right? And so,
well, for me, that part about creating the life that I want has been crucial. You know, even well before I did this, or for years, I started to ask myself, when it came to work and then also in my marriage, is this how I want to be spending my time?
Yeah. Did you read Glennon Doyle's Untamed by chance?
I haven't. No.
Ugh. It's a new book, and she does, and she has this quote that it will stay with me, I imagine, forever. It basically is the version of your life, the most beautiful and true version that you could have imagined. And if it's not, your only job is to create that version.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean, and you know, what that speaks to me is that we already have the answers. We know.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to listen to that voice.
Create enough stillness so that we can hear. Yeah.
All right. So if you looking back, was there a particular time in your life when things were hard and the younger Bryn needed a word of advice? When would that have been, and what would you say to her?
Ooh, yeah, it's a great question. I would say typically it would have been in the moments of self-doubt and the moments where I thought I needed anyone other than myself, right? That's been such a theme of this episode, and I'm so glad that it has been, because it's been the theme of my life. And it would be trust your knowing. You have everything you need within you to have the life that you desire, and you get to have it all. And in that, life would have looked a lot differently. And I'm so grateful it ended up the way that it has, because I wouldn't have had these lessons. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier, pleasure is your birthright. I mean, all of this is our birthright, but if we don't own it and claim it, we don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, we have to claim it.
We do. We certainly do. Yep.
Well, this has been awesome. You're very easy to talk to.
Thank
very
you.
Warm. I appreciate that. And
such
it's
a
been
nice
great
compliment.
Doing this.
It has been. I really appreciate it. And it was a really fun conversation.
So I bet you there's a book, right? At some point, you got to keep me posted and, and you know, come back.
Thanks for planting that seed.
You're welcome. All right, Bryn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show, or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice. Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.